How long should a toothpick last? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the absolute philosopher, no less. Tomorrow, we're going to go in to see our webmaster, Daniel Vinetti. And he is going to help us to make the necessary steps to put our talks on the internet. It has been some weeks now that we've been off the internet. In fact, even some months. And it's not nice because we have so many things to say and we can't get them on the internet to say them. We could if we had really wanted to, but obviously we didn't really want to. Because whatever you really want to do, you can do. Heinz said that he saw a dog when he was a young man, and the dog was a very charming dog. He said, I want a dog just like that. That's the kind of dog I want. Well, lo and behold, how long was it, Heinz? 6 months? 9 months?
About
2 years. 2 years? 2 years later, he was the proud possessor of a dog like that. And he was lying in bed with his wife, thinking beautiful, happy thoughts. And then they thought, gee, I wonder if the trees around here are stable or whether they might fall down and hurt something, you know. I must check them over. And the telephone rang, and somebody called to say that the tree had fallen down on their car. And they didn't like that very much. So you see, Heinz was learning the hard way and a good way that thoughts are things. And that whatever things we think about, that's what happens in our life. And so Heinz immediately started changing his thinking into, I'm independently wealthy, I'm whole and perfect, every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect, I like me, I like me, I like me, and on like that. And that's what the only thing that he's been experiencing since that time. How long should a toothpick last? Well, if you're using the normal wooden toothpicks, they last for one movement. One movement. They ask for one picking of your teeth. But if you have the new toothpicks that are out, they're plastic, and they are just really marvelous. They're tinier, they're flexible, and they do a good job. And then when you're done, you can wash them off and use them again. And hey, that's not a laughable thing. That's a very wonderful thing. The toothpicks aren't that expensive. The plastic and the wooden toothpicks are about the same price. The wooden toothpicks are really a little more expensive because they break off before you even finish using them. You have to have another toothpick. So you're using two for one. But we have given ourselves a whole lot of interesting attitudes in life. We think that we'd like to be... Yes, yes, yes. We think we'd like to be masters. And... Heinz reminded me of an article, a story that he read in Illusions by Richard Bach, where where Richard was sitting talking to this master who didn't want to be a master, and he said to the master, I would give anything to help another person. I am just a very outgoing, sharing, giving person. And so the master, Dhamma Samoda, said to Richard, Richard, be careful what you say. You may have the opportunity to prove yourself. Oh, I would give anything. If somebody came and asked me for something, I would just be happy to give it to them. Well, then, at that moment, out of the bushes behind them, they were out camping, out in the bushes behind them came this man wearing this black cape. And long black hair, and he came up to them very obsequiously, and he said, I have a need. I have a great need. And Donald Samoda said, what can we do for you? He says, I have a great need. And he turned to Richard Bach, and as he turned, he flashed open his beautiful cloak, which was red silk inside and black silk on the outside, and his white shirt, totally unsuiting for out in the middle of the farmer's field in the middle of the night. And Donald said, "Well, who are you?" You know, very naive. And the man says, "I have a need. Will you help me? Will you help me, please?" And Donald says, "Well, whatever you want, I'd be glad to help you. Well, just name it, you know." And the guy said, "If I do not do this, I will die. By midnight, I will die if I do not do this." And Donald says, "Well, what is it you want to do? What do you have to do?" "I need to suck some of your blood." And Donald Simoda sort of snickered, but Richard Bach looked at the guy. "No way, you silly mouse, you know. Get the heck out of here. No way. God, yeah, I'm going to chase you out of here so fast you will. You know about your dust, you know." And the guy said, "Excuse me, excuse me, excuse me," and walked away and disappeared in the night darkness. And Donald Simoda said to Richard Bach, "Richard, I thought you said you would give anything to anybody who needed anything." "But he wanted my blood." "Well, he needed something, and you didn't give it to him, and you said you would." And you see, this is what like we are. We all make empty promises. We all make empty promises that we would do anything. Now, during my seminars, and I give many of them and have a lot of fun doing it, people get so excited about being a master. They want to be a master. And I say, "Be careful, be careful. Being a master isn't all that much fun. The moment you're a master, you don't remember that you're a human being anymore, and you don't act, you don't have the same drives and the same delights. You don't have the same feeling of happiness. You're not touched by the same things anymore. You're totally untouched by them. Be careful." "Well, oh yes, I would. I'd just love to be a master." All right? A master only thinks thoughts in one direction. A master does not think that he would like it and that he wouldn't like it in the same breath. A master is one-pointed in everything he does. A master is always being on top of everything, especially himself. Now, would you still want to be a master? "Oh yes, I still want to be a master." Okay. Then, can you say, "I am a master"? "Yeah, I'm a master." But can you say, "I am a master," again and again and again and again and again, never once doubting it? "Well, sure. Sure, I'm a master. I'm a master. I'm a master." Now, never once doubting it. "Sure, I'm a master. I'm a master. I'm a master." Never once doubting it. Now, what does a master do? Or what can a master do? But since you're a master, what does a master do? He says, "I'm a master." No, a master doesn't say he's a master. He is a master. He doesn't have to say it. He is a master. The President of the United States never tells anybody he's the President of the United States. Everybody knows that. And they tell him, "You're the President. Mr. President, Mr. President, Mr. President." You know, they approach him. Now, do you believe that you're a master? Do people come up to you and say, "Master, show me, Master, open the way, Master, help me"? Do people come up and say that to you? Then maybe you're not a master yet. Maybe you're not being a master. Now, well, can you be a master without anybody saying "Master" to you? Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Sure. You can be whatever kind of master you want to be. Do you want to be an uberalles master? A master over everything, in every area, in every aspect of your life? Is that what you like to be? Well, if that's what you like to be, then you cannot have an awareness of any of the things over which you'd like to be master. Because the moment you're aware of anything, you are not all. And the moment you're aware of all, you're not aware of anything. Now, hey, well, that gets kind of complex and kind of stupid. I want to be a master who knows it all. Well, have you ever met a master who knew it all? Have you ever met a master? Let's just take Jesus. Would you call him a master? Well, sort of, you know. But why wouldn't you call him a master? Well, he got himself killed. He got himself in trouble. He got upset with people. But you wouldn't call him master. I would say pretty close to it, though. Well, who else might you call a master? Who else in the entire universe that you know of would you call a master? Well, can't think of anybody. Can't think of anybody that you know or I know that we could call a master. Now, where have all the masters gone? Surely they must be somewhere and must be there, you know. What happened? Well, as I said, once you are a master, you don't know about anything in the relative. You know only the allness. And as long as you're relative, you'll never know the master, because you only know the relative. Now, those are pretty tough things. That's pretty tough things. It's just like spiritual healing we spoke about the other day. In spiritual healing, a person wants, oh, would you like a spiritual healing? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Remember now, when you have the spiritual healing, you will not remember you were ever sick. You will not remember that you ever had a hospital appointment. You'll never remember that you had pills. Your parents won't remember. Your family won't remember. Your doctors won't remember. It's as though that area of your life never happened. And, of course, it's an illusion that can never happen. It's just that easy. Just that area of your life never happened. Okay? So you have your spiritual healing, and that area of your life never happened. Nobody's going to come up to you and say, hey, I hear you had cancer. How'd you get over it? You know, I never had cancer. I never had that. Well, who could ask the question? Well, theoretically, a master could ask a question, but a master wouldn't ask the question, because the master does not see that. You see, you all want to work with somebody who is of a high consciousness here. And if anyone works with you as a high consciousness here, do you know what would happen? That person, if they were any good, would see right through you and see how beautiful you are, would see the master in you, would see the genius in you, the wholeness in you, the perfection in you. And they could not see your limitation. You could see them, you could know they exist, but they don't know you on any level other than being a master. Now, you say, well, if they really are a master and they wouldn't know anything on the relative, how would they know us on the relative? That's a good question, isn't it? It's a good question. Is there such a thing as being master of certain areas of your life? Of being spiritually healed in certain areas of your life? Is there such a thing as being aware, having moments of illumination, moments of inspiration, where you see the light and you say, my God, oh, wow, you know? But why don't you stay there? You don't stay there because you're curious. If you were not curious, you would remain there. But you see, you're curious. Hey, how do I get there? How do I do this? Right away, you close the door for yourself. Right away, you bring yourself back to your human attitude, your human consciousness, your human way of thinking. And when you do that, too bad. You're out of business again. If you really want to do it right, if you really want to live in this high state of consciousness, then you have no nose at all, and no one has to cut it off. You have no interest in anybody else except, I see you fulfilled. I see you fulfilled, fulfilled, fulfilled. See what I mean? And you're not fulfilling, you are fulfilled. You know, it's done. You're cooked. And if you could train yourself to live in a fulfilled state of consciousness, and you can do that if you keep it to yourself, then the bigger picture opens up for you too. Now, what did Donald Simoda have? What book did he carry with him? The Messiah's Handbook. The Messiah's Handbook. Nice book, nice name. The Messiah's Handbook. Now, what sort of things did it say in there? It said all of the things in there that if you paid attention to that, then you were not a Messiah. Does a Messiah pay attention to walking through walls? Does a Messiah pay attention to who his brother is, who his family are? Does a Messiah follow his genetics? Does a Messiah, what does a Messiah do? Yeah? And all the things that he says the Messiah does, very human. And what was he saying? These are the areas to let alone, to be untouched in. These are the areas to just not pay attention. What did he, as the Messiah, do in the book? It said he was speaking to a crowd in Indiana. And he said to the crowd, as a Messiah, what if God spoke to you and told you something? Would you do what he said? And the crowd said, oh my, yes. And then he said, and what if God told you, be yourself and have fun? Would you do that? Oh my, yes. Well, so it is for me this day. Adios, amigos. And he took off. And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. But you see, the people didn't know that they were releasing him. They could have said, if God said, be yourself and have fun, then you've got to learn what God means by be yourself and have fun, you know. And they didn't say that. Then you've got to learn what your neighbors think about that and how the world thinks about that, because you're the Messiah and you got to stick around and you got to help all these people, you know. And what happened to the fish that was clinging onto the rocks? What happened to him, Heinz?
He let go.
Huh? He let go. He let go, and then what happened to him?
He was free.
He was battered.
Oh, yeah.
And beat. Oh, yeah, you forget that part, yeah. He was battered and beat along the rocks of the river, but he was swirled ever upward. And so then he just let go and was in the flow, and he says, hey, this is pretty cool. And then what did another group of Klingons do as they looked up at him? There goes the Messiah! It's so beautiful, you know? And this is what we do. We worship something merely because we don't understand it. And you're talking about watching Samantha and you're talking about watching this show. Bewitched. Thank you. And in Bewitched, Samantha went back to the early days in America, and Darren, her husband, lit a match, and they thought he was a witch. But you see, they thought he was a witch. Now, wouldn't that be something? Back in those days, to have a match? I mean, my goodness, you could really make a good business. But of course, you'd have to have sulfur production, you'd have to have lumber production, make the little slivers of sticks out of it. You'd have to know about the friction on a piece of cardboard so that you could do that. Of course, they have these strike matches that you just hit on the bottom of your pants, or shoo, you know. But hey, that's neat stuff, you know. But why not? Why not? Didn't you often think when they go back to previous dates like that, that they should somehow manipulate it so that they have money and they buy Manhattan Island or something like that, you know, and have the title in their name, and then come back to the 21st century and they own all Manhattan Island? My God, they'd be even richer than Bill Gates. But wouldn't that be something? My goodness sakes. And or just buy the land on which a bunch of oil wells are, you know. Or maybe the Arab, Kuwait, isn't it? The Kuwait? Kuwait, with all of its wonderful oil. And, you know, wouldn't that be something? Imagine that. Imagine that. And can you? Sure. Do people do it? Sure. Remember The Secret? It said, how much of the world's wealth lays in the hands of 0.3% of the people? 97% of the world's wealth lays in the hands of just a tiny percent of the people. And that's interesting. Now, as they will try to tell you, it was just because they knew the secret.
Yeah.
And the secret was the law of cause and effect.
Yeah.
The secret was speaking their word and claiming the truth and enjoying their toothpicks.
Yeah.
And doing it then. I mean, there's a lot of things. If you read history, and read it carefully, you find a lot of things come to light in history that shouldn't, and that were not really founded until much later, but yet they were there, like with Leonardo da Vinci and his helicopter and diving bell, just to name the two. But I'm sure there are many, many others, because many people had illumination, had insights into their future, which would be the now for all of us. But this is quite fascinating. Quite fascinating. Are you ready to be a master? And the answer is no. You're ready to be a master when you don't give it a thought, when you don't want it or not want it. You're ready to be a master when you are ready to be the type of person that a master is. Now, what is the type of person that a master is?
Being himself and have fun.
Well, yes, he's being himself and having fun. But what is the type of person that a master is?
Unconditionally loving.
Yeah. Yeah. A master is unconditionally loving. He loves everybody and everything, and he doesn't want anything from anybody. He doesn't take anything from anybody or give anything to anybody. He just exists in this fabulous world, in a fabulous body, in a fabulous mind, in a fabulous everything, you know. And unconditional love. He looks at everybody, and he sees them beautiful. He looks at everybody, he sees them whole and perfect. He looks at the grass, and he sees it green, and it's green. It might have been brown an instant before. He looks at the trees, and they are exactly as he wants them to be. They're tall and straight and beautiful. Whatever it is that he chooses, you know. A master looks at the sky. He wants a blue sky. It's blue. He'd like a nice rainy sky. Master says, I love the rain. I think I would like to have a nice week of steady rain gently penetrating the soil, going down and building up the water table. And then the master says, well, why am I manipulating? The water table is abundant, and it is eternally abundant, right below here, not more than 800 feet below here, is a large lake, a large reservoir, larger than this whole mountainside here, but it's a bit lower. It's just beautiful. It's been there and untouched. And no one has ever dropped a pipe down into it. You know? And, of course, we don't need to drop a pipe down into it. What can we do? We can have an artesian well. We can have a hole in the ground, a crack, and then up comes water, and it's just an artesian well, steadily flowing water, like I had in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, right behind my office of my newspaper there. There's a little park. And in the park is an artesian well. And the artesian well was maybe about 1,000 feet higher, 800 to 1,000 feet higher, than the river, the Mississippi River, and the Wisconsin River, where they joined there. But this water was just percolating up, the pure, beautiful water, fabulous water, and they bottled it, they capped it, so that they would run in a happy way, and they could utilize it. But then people drilled their own wells and did their own thing, and it became just a monument in the park. But it's been there for hundreds of years. Now, is that ever going to run dry?
No.
No. Why should it? Now, John, you're thinking, I like oil. And so, in your backyard, you say, I think I'd like a nice oil well. I'd like it with grade 42, you know, high quality grade. I want the best grade of oil coming out. And then over here, I'd like a little gasoline well, you know, with special gasoline that's whatever the octane is we want, 97 or whatever it is, and or 92. And then over here, I would like to have a water well. the purest water, the most wonderful water that you could ever want to drink in your life. And then over here, John, over here, see, it's five now, over here is hot air, hot water.
Geothermal.
Thank you.
Geothermal.
Geothermal, right. A geothermal well, like they have over here in Holtville and in El Centro and so forth. They have a lot of geothermal wells because just below the surface of the earth, maybe about 50 feet, is this geothermal water system. Amazing. And they use it for many things, technically and what have you. Okay, now, that's kind of fun. And then John, being the inquisitive, nosy person that he is, says, where there's got to be all this stuff, there must be oil and silver and uranium and things like that too. And so he says, I think I'll take a look. And so mentally he penetrates into the earth, mentally, and he sees storehouses of all this just waiting for him to call up for whatever he needs. But he doesn't need it. And he doesn't tell anybody that's there. He doesn't tell the world that all this stuff is there. He doesn't care. Because he's like Saint Germain. What does he do? Heinz, what does he do?
He's an alchemist.
Yeah, but what does Saint Germain do?
He thinks his thought and whatever he needs is...
That's right. Oh, and also, somebody asks for money. He reaches down, takes a clump of dirt, and puts it in his hand, and closes his hand on it, and the clump of dirt, with the pressure of his hand, so forth, becomes a beautiful diamond. But not only a diamond, a faceted diamond, but a glorious diamond, exactly equal to the amount of money that he felt that he'd like to have. And he gives it to the person, and they take it to the appraiser, and the appraiser says, this is X dollars, that's just what I wanted, you know. No more, no less. But is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I bet you it's true. Yes?
Is he still around Saint-Germain?
Oh, yes, he's still around Saint-Germain.
He's sitting at the table.
Yeah. But is he still around Saint-Germain? Is he? Was he ever not around? Was he around from the beginning? And just, are you still around?
Yes.
Are you Saint-Germain as much as Saint-Germain is? Yes. But you see, you doubt. So therefore, you cannot express it. You cannot experience him. If you don't doubt, then you can be it.
Thank you.
Were we all there at the time Jesus was doing his thing?
Yes.
Were we all there with Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and all these other great beings? Were we there where all the great men of all time were doing their thing? Were maybe even the great man itself, you know, or great woman? Were we there? You bet. Now, do you remember it? No. Do you want to remember it?
But I have to think of it.
If you want to remember it, then you think of it. But you see, that only happens. That only happens when you have trained your imagination, when you have trained your
visualization.
You've trained your ability to see that which is not seen. Now, how can you see that which is not seen?
I imagine it. I see it.
Yeah, you imagine it. You see it. But do you think Leonardo da Vinci actually saw a helicopter? And do you think he drew what he knew of what he saw?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if he wanted to draw more, he could have?
Yes.
Do you think he could have drawn the engine? Could he have drawn the specifications for the petrol, for the gasoline, for the engine, or the oil for the engine? Mm-hmm. Could he have drawn all these things? Sure. Because there is only now and here as the only time and space. Now, you say, that's amusing. Well, it's not amusing. It's just fact. But it's amusing to us who are not practicing it. If we practice it, it's not amusing, it's just the way it is. Now, Heinz, why do you create a car in such a form? Why do you create a house in such a form? Why do you create, every time you build a house, it looks like a Swiss chalet, you know? You know, that's your favorite type of house. So when Heinz goes to New Zealand, he builds a Swiss chalet. Heinz goes to Africa, he builds a Swiss chalet. Heinz goes any place, he builds a Swiss chalet. That's his favorite house. Now, what if Heinz learned of another type of favorite house? He'd still build a Swiss chalet. Because that is his house. When he is no longer hung up on that, why is he hung up on Swiss chalets? Because that's the type of thing his father built. That's the type of thing the family is involved in. That's the type of thing that you've known all your life, right? You've lived in them, you've experienced them, and hey, nothing wrong with them, but it's limited for only one type of building. But be creative, let your imagination soar and open up the inner doors of creativity, and pretty soon you'll be doing like the Atlanteans did. And they created their beautiful homes with all the magic of it, invisible to everybody. But they can look out the windows and they can look out and see it. And the home is always perfectly conditioned, you know, not with air or without air. It's just perfect. Not warm, not cold, just beautiful. It has always the right amount of light. And we're making homes like that now with the windows that are tempered windows that change with the heat. Just like people buy glasses and you look at the sun and the glasses get darker. You go inside, the glasses get lighter. Well, that's what these people are doing when they buy the windows that change with the radiance of the sun. It's beautiful. But you see, if you're only going to use one toothpick and you're going to learn how to use it, then you've got it made. But if you're going to go buying boxes of wooden toothpicks that break off and that don't stand up under the use of more than once, hey, that's no fun. That's no fun at all. What is the end of a pencil that is most used by creative beings?
Rubber.
The rubber. They chew on the end of the pencil.
Chew down.
And where do people look when you ask them a question? They look into the universal mind and the universal consciousness. When are we going to get the message? Huh? Uh-huh. Kind of fun, isn't it? Well, buy plastic toothpicks that last a long time and you'll enjoy them and you'll be joining the ranks of the masters who use these plastic toothpicks more than once. Have a lovely evening and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.